abrupt ending to that song. I always wanted to keep going so I can dance. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. Thank you for joining me today. I have the distinct honor and pleasure of introducing a woman with incredible vision and compassion. And I think the listeners will find this particularly valuable because she was a recent recipient of a Trailblazer Award from the National Association of Women Business Owners in the Inland Empire of California. Her name is R.J. Jackson, the Courage Giver. R.J., are you with me?
I certainly am, my sister.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. We've got a lot to talk about today.
Well, let's get started.
Let's get started. Tell us about the Courage Giver. Why and how did you come upon, why were you given this name?
I love that question, and it always reminds me of who I am in Christ. And I was in church. Actually, before I'd gone to church one morning, I was praying, Lord, I need to know what it is you want me to do and how you want me to do it with the gifts that you've given me. And it was really the heartbeat of my prayer. And I went to church, and we had a guest speaker. And as he was talking, he talked about Barnabas being a man of encouragement and how people needed to be encouraged. And I knew the gift, one of the gifts that God had given me was to encourage his people. And just as I was listening and taking notes, the Lord just dropped it in my spirit. That's what I want you to do. Be a courage giver. Give people the courage to walk in their destiny and their purpose. And I've been doing that ever since.
I'm so glad that you do it, because often, and you just implied this, people are afraid.
Yes.
Why do they need courage to walk in the destiny and along the path that they've been created and divinely anointed to do?
Because of what you just said, people are afraid. They have fear. And I always say fear is running from something that's not even after you. It's like being in the house at night and you hear the floors creak and you're like, who's in here? You know no one's in the house, but you panic and you prepare yourself, you arm yourself to fight a battle that you don't even have to fight. And most of the time, that's what we do. Instead of walking in our destiny, we're captivated by fear. We're paralyzed and we don't walk in our destiny because we're afraid. Well, what if I fail? Well, what if I don't get any help? Well, what if no money comes in for me to do what I'm supposed to do? And we end up not doing anything.
You know, fear, false evidence appearing real, mm-hmm. and fail, fear, and faith. You know, those, and we associate that ink of red, you know, that red letter ink in elementary school, you know, when you failed on something, a teacher would use a red pen and write it across the page and put a gold star if you pass. Do you think that in this area of divine anointment and following your heart's call, people carry with them these three F's? There is an element of faith that's mixed in with fear as a result of earlier experiences associated with failure?
Absolutely. We are pretty much products of our environment and what we've been told. That's actually where we get our self-confidence from if we don't realize who we are in God. And so the things that we were told by our teachers, by our parents, by our friends, if we don't know who we are, those things stick to us. And I remember my third grade teacher giving me a U, which stands for unsatisfactory, in speech. But to this day, I am a professional speaker, and I travel and have traveled around the world using what she said was unsatisfactory. And it's because God had a purpose and a destiny for RJ. Not my third grade teacher. She was actually supposed to be the one who helped build up and encourage me to do what God has called me to do. But because of her own fear, because of her own intuition about things. She tried to put that on me. And that's why I say to people, never let people tell you what you can or cannot do. Never.
You know, it's amazing the influence of a teacher and the influence of anyone in a position that we view as leadership and that we associate being respectful toward, and how their own limitations can be cast upon others in ways that they may not even always intend, you know, or aware of, but yet it sticks, you know, starting at such a young age, whether it's a parent and what we say to our children that we might think is, you know, to be taken lightly, but it sticks. And the flip side of it is that good words, encouraging words, and words of faith and words of belief can also stick, you know, and stay with us in a way that propels us forward. Did you have any of those experiences?
I did. And, you know, when you talk about words, words are like nitrogen. Mm-hmm. Words, nitrogen is used to either build up or tear down. And when people are sick and they need help with their heart, they're given a little pill. It's nitrogen. But at the same time, when someone wants to destroy a building that's been standing for 50 years and they want to do it quickly, they use nitrogen. And we all have those experiences with people where they use words to build us up or they use words to tear us down. When I talk about teachers, great influence, I've had great teachers. My third grade teacher was a great teacher. She just didn't see in me what God saw in me. And I've had teachers that reminded me, my ninth grade teacher, when I was failing, literally deserving the grades I got because I was failing, she said to me, come see me after school because I see so much inside of you and I want to help you. And to this day, I always say that God created me, William and Rhoda Jackson conceived me, Sister Marge, which is my ninth grade teacher, saw potential in me, and all I want you to do is see Jesus in me.
You know, all of us have, I can share and relate to you, I'm sure that many of us, I should say, have experiences that are similar in regards to taking a bad influence and turning it into good.
Yes.
And drawing strength from a negative experience and watching how God turns that into marvelous.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you made me think of, you know, one of my experiences was in high school, and I used to struggle with advanced math. And became very intimidated by it because I didn't want to get in class and have to go up to the chalkboard and then not know what I was doing. And I had a teacher, Mike Clifton. Today, I saw him just recent being a couple years ago, after more than 30-something years, I saw him. And I remember Mike Clifton telling me after class, come see him at 7:30 the next morning. And what he did for the rest of that school year was instill a deep sense of confidence and belief to remove the intimidation that I had associated with math. And he had me go on the board and work through each of the homework assignments and explain it. And then during class, encouraged me to raise my hand to go up and do a problem that previously I would not never have done. And then to take that forward, in college, I had applied for something called the Watson Fellowship, a very prestigious fellowship, and had applied to study the history of Black Russians. And I'll never forget, RJ, being in the registrar's office. I was waiting for, you know, determination on my application, anticipating I would get an interview with all of the support I had for preparing it, when the professor who was responsible for those decisions saw me and came into the registrar's office during registration, lots of students around, and said, are you Gail Brown? And I said, yes, hi, you know, expecting something, you know, something favorable. And he said, you know, I just want you to know I have your application and there's no way I'll be submitting it because the only place that Black students will be authorized to study under my watch is Africa. And you have no business going to Russia. And I'll never forget the eerie silence that captivated the room and you know, kind of like an earthquake, how everything around us is like the birds stop tweeting, you know? And then inside, you know, the tears starting to rush to my eyes and the disbelief. But then hearing later on, as I shared this with my parents, hearing my parents, say my mother in particular, write a letter. You know, write a letter. Mm-hmm. He's not the beginning nor the end. And use the power of the pen to address the cause.
Absolutely.
So I see as a part of your story is that you have been referenced and as a distinguished contributor to quite a few publications, and you also are the author of Conversations of Courage, Stories of Success, Hope and Possibilities, along with A Cup of Courage for Your Crisis. Can you speak about those?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. Thanks for asking about those awesome books. The first one I'd like to speak about is Conversations of Courage, and they are stories of success, hope, and possibility. It's a 3-volume book, and it's funny how when God gives you something and you say yes, how he will just show up and people will be blessed. It was in the middle of the night when it came to me to work on that anthology and put that together. And I called the publicist the next morning, my publisher. I called her the next morning. And within 4 months, we had volume one, hardback cover, where we had gathered women and men together who had a story to tell. Because, as you know, we all have a story.
All of us do. And we never know what someone else's story is until
Absolutely.
We're willing to listen.
That's
broken
right.
Broken to listening.
And we gathered the women together who had the courage, because that's what it takes. And courage is being afraid, but willing to press in to God anyway, to go forth anyway. And so women had stories to tell about abuse. They had stories to tell about loss of a child, stories to tell about rape. They had stories to tell that they wanted to change and help shape someone else's destiny. And they had the courage to tell their story. The power of the pen, as you say. They wrote their stories. We compiled them into the anthology. And within a year, we had volumes 1, 2, and 3.
How can our listeners obtain a copy?
That would be awesome. They can visit me online at www.thecouragegiver.com. Again, that's www.thecouragegiver.com. You can always find me on Facebook under Facebook/TheCourageGiver. We'd be honored to put a copy in your hand that will help change your life and remind you that you're not alone.
What was your first experience in having to tap into the element of courage?
Well, I honestly tell people I walk by faith and not by sight. And every day I get up, it's a day of courage. But going back to what I can remember, I'm sure there were probably things that occurred that I didn't quite remember. But going back to when I was younger, I remember when I was around 16 years old and being the daddy's girl that I am, I never went anywhere without my daddy. But this day I had the courage to say, you know, I'm going to go to the eye doctor by myself. And my dad was like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. And when I got there, I got some really bad and disturbing news about my vision. And it was heartbreaking for me.
How old were you?
I was about 16. Mm. I was still in high school. But I had the courage to go alone. And then I had the courage to do what it took to help me survive and to make it through life with the news that they had shared with me.
So what was the news?
And well, the news is I am legally blind in one eye. And I have a disease called keratoconus in both of my eyes. And I live with that, which is, we wouldn't have enough time to explain it, but I like the way Stevie Wonder says, just because a person doesn't have eyesight doesn't mean they don't have vision. And one thing that God has blessed me to do is, even though I may not be able to see you, I can see your heart, And so I always see the beauty in people because I look beyond the outer exterior, beyond the makeup, beyond the designer clothes, and I can see you for who God created you to be. And if I see you the way God created you to be, I can treat you for who you really are. And it's an awesome way to live life. I kid you not.
So you bring a message of courage, a message of vision. Speak to the confidence.
The confidence comes from knowing who you are. And you have to really know who you are in Christ. There's no way around that. When I was growing up, I really didn't have the confidence that it took to survive. And I stayed home a lot. I was failing in school, and I was a daddy's girl because that was like my shelter, and that was just my love. But because my parents took time to nurture me in knowing who I was in Christ, as I got older, I began to understand what that meant. Even though I loved the Lord for a long time, I've loved the Lord literally all my life, but it wasn't until I literally tapped into what His Word said about me and who I really was that I started blossoming, that I started living life to the fullest, knowing, as the Bible says, what it means to be the apple of God's eye, what it means to be the head and not the tail, the lender and not the borrower, more than a conqueror, that no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So it had to change from hearing the words to believing the words and then being willing to walk in those words. It was then when the confidence began to build.
What kind of time frame are you talking about? Are you referring to a lifelong journey and just an evolving, that different phases you look back and you see that there's been progress made? Or are you referring to a concentrated period of time where you went into deep meditation and study?
Well, for me personally, and everyone is different, and that's the beauty of God. We're all different. For me, once I graduated from high school, because my ninth grade teacher, Sister Marge, took time to really let me know who I was, and she would not give up on it. Matter of fact, she asked me to come to her classroom so she can help me with math, but the first 3 months that we were together was all about confidence, who I was, and she instilled that in me. So because she gave me that foundation and she helped build on what was already in me that I didn't see, the process started and it continued, and we had what we call discipline. So when you look at a time frame, discipline is important because consistency is important. You can get what you need. It's like a diet. If you want to use that as an illustration, you start a diet the first 3 weeks, it works well because you're doing all the right things, and then all of a sudden you say, let me eat these cookies. And then the next thing you know, you're eating 4 cookies. The next thing you know, you're eating a pack of cookies. You got cookies at your bedside on your nightstand, and then all of a sudden what was working no longer works. So it's a matter of being consistent and having discipline before you can put a time frame on it. It could take a week, it could take a year, but it's always a process.
We just received a text from a listener, and the question is, I've grown up knowing the Lord all my life, and I still don't know what it means to be in Him and to understand what I mean to Him. These are phrases that I hear often in church, but I still can't make the connection. Can RJ explain?
That's an awesome question. It's actually a two-part question, so let me deal with the first part of the question, in Him. It's like when you make a cake and the ingredients require that you put 2 eggs in the batter. You have all the ingredients. You have the eggs sitting on the side. You have your flour. You have everything sitting out. But it's not until you take those ingredients and you put them in the bowl and you mix them and you stir them up, will your cake come out properly? Now, you can take all those things and maybe leave the eggs out and still bake the cake, but it's not going to taste the same. It's not going to rise the same. It's not going to be appealing to the eye. But when you take all those ingredients and put them in the bowl and mix them in together, then the end result is awesome.
You know, one of the other analogies that I've often used, too, that's cake-related, is if you keep doing things the same way, you keep getting the same result.
Absolutely.
And if you want a red velvet cake, then you don't use pound cake recipes. You know, if you want a German chocolate cake, you don't use the ingredients for a pineapple upside down cake. And even though we may have these common in these variations might have common ingredients, they don't all mix and match the same depending on the result or the outcome that's desired.
Absolutely. So when we talk about being in Him, it means that we have to be willing to surrender our thoughts, our plans, our ideas, and know that from the beginning God created us. As it says in Jeremiah, He created us for a hope and for success. He knows the plans that He has for us. So we have to be willing to get into Him by getting in His Word, by spending time with Him in prayer, by feeding our mind and our soul with those things that will take us closer to Him. And that's what we mean when we say in Him. Remember, like the cake, you can have the eggs on the side, but until you put the eggs in, your cake is not complete. Our life is not complete if we do not put ourselves in Him, in His plans, in His purpose for our life, and then live out of that.
It requires being still. You know, being busy and jamming as many things as we can into our schedule, into the course of a day, into a month, with all of our goal setting, often leaves us depleted and crams out any space for us to really be still and to hear His voice. And being still isn't, at least in my mind, isn't always, you know, sitting under a fig tree humming. You know, it just means eliminating as many distractions as possible. Mm-hmm. And getting to that place of releasing and freeing ourselves to not text for an hour, to turn the cell phone off, or to turn the TV off, or to turn the computer off, is a challenge for a lot of people. You know, it's almost like the cookie example you just gave. You know, you can start off right, but then we're so accustomed to the behavior that until we set ourselves intentionally and commit to, which was the discipline part you referred to, a new path, then there will always be this sense of disconnect.
Absolutely. And when we turn those things off, we can get still and quiet, and for some people, most people, that's a scary thing to
do. Yes, it is.
Because then we have to be faced with who we are.
Who are we?
So in terms of the other part of the question that your listeners so kindly texted into you today, when we talk about being in God and we talk about knowing who we are in Him, we have to understand that we are made literally in His image, and we are a reflection of Him, and that's how we have to see ourselves. That's how our confidence is built. And it's interesting that the only way that we can typically see ourselves is in a mirror. Would you agree? I mean, there's no other way that you can see what your makeup looks like for the day unless you look into the mirror. But the truth is, you don't really see yourself when you look in that mirror. It's your reflection of yourself. The reflection is just a picture. But if you want to really see yourself, you have to spend time with God in His Word. And do you know that God says in Thessalonians that as women we are considered the daughters of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so amazing to me. Because
what a nice expression. Where is that verse, daughters of the day?
It's in 1 Thessalonians. I have to look it up to see exactly where it is. But it's in 1 Thessalonians where God says, we are the daughter of the day. And that makes me feel so special because if I'm the daughter of the day, I know he has my picture on his refrigerator. I know it's there. And he looks at it every day because he considers me the daughter of the day. But the wonderful thing about it is he considers you the daughter of the day too. So he has no favorites. I love it. But the only way we know that is we have to spend time in his word.
It's true. Talk to us about the Trailblazer Award. Thank you for answering her question.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Mm-hmm. Well, I was really honored and shocked. I was the professional speaker who was speechless last week when NABO honored me as the Trailblazer of the Year for NABO. And what that award is an award for a woman who has blazed or trailed the way by her life, who has created her own success, and we all know that that's in God because we don't create our own, but it's in him. And she's contributed to the growth of other women as well by maintaining her vision and demonstrating strength and innovation. So for a group of women to come together and select me amongst awesome women who were also nominated and well-deserving of the award was just very humbling for me. I still to this day cannot believe that they called my name. It was so funny when she called my name. She said, RJ Jackson. I thought, okay, there are a lot of RJ Jacksons. I know she's not calling my name. But when she said, the courage giver.
The courage giver.
Oh, that's me. That's me. That's my fingerprint. That's my footprint that the Lord has commissioned me to leave. That's me. Oh, my God, did she just say my name? Mm-hmm. But it really is an honor for someone to see God in me because that's why I live my life, to give other people, and particularly women, the opportunity to understand that they do not have to die where they're living and they no longer have to live where they're dying. That there's hope and possibility for their life and they are not alone. And when people see that, that is my heartbeat. That's what I get up for every day. And for someone to say, I want to nominate you for what you do, and for someone to say, I want to bless you for what you do, really is an encouragement for the courage giver herself. That would be me.
It's wonderful to hear that that an organization of women, so not just, you know, one individual, but many people see your heart and they see beyond the outside, but they see the greater parts of who you are and why you do what you do to express and share this love. Is this what's taking you to Haiti?
It is what has taken me to Haiti, the opportunity to give my life away, because I always say that life is not measured by what you have. And this is a Zig Ziglar quote. But it says, life is measured by what you give. And I have something that God has put inside of me that if I keep it to myself, then life becomes about me. But if I am willing to have the courage to give it away, even if I'm afraid, even if I don't know what I'm doing, even if I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, if I just say I'm going to do it and trust God that he's called me to do it and go do it, then I'm living. That's when I'm living, when I'm giving my life away.
This philosophy and this approach to giving your life away and giving God's love away take you to other countries like Thailand, Kenya, Cambodia, Bermuda, Barbados.
I'm so blessed. It has. I'm so blessed to say, and when you say it, I just have to be in awe, like, wow, look what God has done.
Yeah.
How he has used me, and not because I'm somebody any specialer than anyone else, but because I said I'm available.
I'm available.
I'll go. I don't like bugs, Lord. Please get that fly away from me. And the people on my team, they laugh. They say, RJ, it's just a fly. I'm like, I don't care. Get him away from me. But to be able to go and lay down and know there's a mouse, and I don't like mice, but to know that I can lay there and say, but my laying here where this mice is traveling in my path is going to bring hope to somebody because I came across the country to love on them, to feed them, to remind them of who they are, it's well worth it.
Wow. R.J. Jackson, the courage giver. You know, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 5, it says, you're the sons of light, daughters of day.
Amen.
We live under wide open skies and know where we stand. So let's not sleepwalk through life like those others. Let's keep our eyes open and be smart. People sleep at night and get drunk at night, but not us. Since we're creatures of day, let us act like it. Walk out into the daylight sober, dressed up in faith, love, and the hope of salvation. God did not set us up for an angry rejection, but for salvation by our Master, Jesus Christ. He died for us, a death that triggered life. So whether we're awake with the living or asleep with the dead, we're alive in Him. So speak encouraging words to one another. Build up hope so you'll be together in this with no one left out, no one left behind. 1 Thessalonians 5:5, one of the daughters of the day and the courage giver. Thank you, R.J. Jackson, for joining me today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure and an honor to give my time away to bless someone else, and it's been a blessing to me as well.
Congratulations on your awards, and have a wonderful trip. This program is available on Facebook/Sylvia Global. And also, R.J., would you like to share your Facebook address again?
Absolutely. That's Facebook/TheCourageGiver, TheCourageGiver. Just type in The Courage Giver anywhere in your Google search engine, and I promise you, I'll come up and you'll see me.
That's wonderful.
To connect with you as well.
This program is also available on iTunes as a podcast under sylviaglobal.com. Thank you, RJ. Come back again and join us. We'd love to hear an update on your trip to Haiti, and blessings, peace, and a lot of joy and laughter in your life.
And to you as well, my sister. Thank you for the opportunity. Wishing you all of God's best.
You're welcome.
You are the daughter of the day.
Thank you.